In the 79th reel of Sewell movies, the boys go back in time to solve the mystery of 1985's Clue. After the FBI breaks that case, they head to the theater to watch Leonardo DiCaprio play the originator of the FBI in J. Edgar, or Jedgar. Since Leo looks so much like a Muppet in all that makeup, they decide to review the trailer for the revival of The Muppets. In news, they talk about the possibility of the Doctor Who movie, a live-action CGI Lego movie, and Eddie's out and Billy's in for the Oscars. It's the 79th reel of COL movies. I don't know. He's on everybody else's. Why shouldn't he be on mine?
The past.
You telling me you built a time machine? Out of a DeLorean?
The present.
When does this happen in the movie?
Now. You're looking at now, sir. Everything that happens now is happening now.
The future.
Hi. Welcome to the future.
And I'm telling you, it's great here.
You're listening to COL Movies.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to a brand spanking new episode of COL Movies, reel number 79. I can't speak today, apparently. But I would like to introduce my prolific co-hosts, Ray and Steve. How are you guys doing?
Doing good. Getting ready to get my turkey on.
For real.
This show is going to really suck because we got a lot of Hoover. Anyways.
Wow. Moving right on. I'm glad you said prolific, though. For half a second, I thought it said prophylactic.
Sweet.
Kidding.
Well, glad I didn't have a mispronunciation there. In a few times. Anyways. Going on.
You on the mark.
Yates to direct a Doctor Who movie.
Yeah, I don't think I wasn't expecting to see or hear about. So David Yates, the guy who directed a crap ton of the Harry Potter films, is supposedly all signed on to direct a big screen adaptation of Doctor Who, which is, we've had two previous Doctor Who movies, although most non-fan people, well, the first one, yeah, they were both television movies. I'm not sure about the 1965 one, but yeah, I'm pretty sure. And most non-hardcore fans have probably not seen them.
Nope.
So I'm really interested to see. I was worried when I saw this because the first movie is, you know, 1964, so it looks like something from 1964. Doctor Who's always been sort of accused of not having the greatest look to it, and in reading the article, I'm glad that they said that they really want to spend the time. He said it'll take us 2 to 3 years to get it right. And he goes, we really need to step it up to bring it to the big screen. So at least he's thinking sort of, you know, in a broader perspective. So for all you Doctor Who fans out there, the only thing we've got to worry about right now is that they're looking for writers. Although I think a couple of the TV show writers would be, you know, I don't see why they wouldn't use them, per se.
Yeah, really. The show is written really well, so why wouldn't they? Yeah. Especially if they want to keep it in the same universe.
Right. Well, so that's our biggest worry right now. But I'm sort of, excited to see if it translates. In 2 to 3 years, though, you know, who knows if the current Doctor will still be the Doctor. So,
yeah.
You know, I don't know if Matt Smith's going to be in the... Maybe they'll use it as the regeneration point. I don't know.
Yeah. Well, maybe they'll just do a life of its own Doctor. You know, the
wasn't
movie.
David Tennant was like for 6 seasons or something like that. He was in there for a long time.
Yeah, I mean, if you go through the histories of doctors, they, you know, you've had some that have been doctor for as long as, you know, 10 years, 7 years, I think. And then, you know, you've had ones that are as little as a year. So,
yeah. Eccleston.
Yeah.
What if they completely flip the script and have a female doctor?
That would be awesome. Although I would be totally down with a River Song movie. Mm-hmm. If they used her to be the female Time Lord, I would be totally okay with that. But yeah, so sort of excited, sort of scared.
Maybe they have to think of Doctor Who more in the terms of Trill.
Maybe.
Because it's the Doctor is, when you think about it, a Trill and Doctor Who are kind of the same thing in some ways, because each time it's a different personality, but still kind of it's still the Doctor, right? While right. Like with the Dax symbiote, you know, it was a different personality. Like I just been watching DS9 on Netflix, just went from Jadzia to Ezri, and Ezri is completely different than Jadzia, but still it's Dax.
Right. Mm-hmm. It's shared, it's basically for the most part shared memories and a little bit of personality. Right. You know.
Right. So you kind of have that same thing. So why does it have to always be a male?
Oh, it, I don't think
is it
does.
Is a Time Lord male, or is a Time Lord female, or is it not?
I think they have hinted at in the show that there have been times in his history when he has not been male. So
yeah, he's been attracted to men. He's been attracted. I mean, there's been hints to that throughout the
So you know, I mean, throughout it's the series. Entirely possible, and I would be okay with that as long now, as the person did a good job.
Do you guys think that they should, just out of curiosity feedback on it, do you think that they should keep it in the style of the BBC? Like the kind of just in the visuals of it? Or do you think that they should really take it cinematic?
Well, I think that's one of the things he talks about in the article. Yeah. Is that he really thinks that they need to bring the look to the big screen. So,
yeah.
Well, think of it more of like how Star Trek The Next Generation was a television series and right. movies. Because right. the movies, you know, the same equipment, but the lighting's a little bit different.
Right.
And maybe the visual quality is a little bit better. The effects are a little bit better. So you have these touches of betterness because it's a movie in different styles just because of lighting and such that they use for a movie set.
Well, so, one of the key differences there is you're moving from video to film. So
right.
You know, in this age of digital cinema, that's a little more transparent, but, you know, we'll see.
Yeah, and I was thinking of those. That is the prime example.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the way that Star Trek has translated to the screen, you know, and kind of fit in the same universe
mm-hmm.
and that kind of stuff. And that's, I was wondering if y'all thought that it would be kind of in a similar vein.
Yeah, maybe. You know, keep that thought though, that sort of the transition between video to actual film, traditional film and digital cinema in the back of your brain for next week. Just a little hint.
Gotcha. Okay.
Interesting. Moving on. What's next? We got live-action CGI Lego movie greenlit. Yes, the Legos are coming to the big screen. Something, and they've kind of had movies before in the silver screen.
Yeah,
the small screen.
Yeah, I saw this this headline and I was like, wait, what? So I'm reading this article and I'm looking for any little hints about what this is about, and I guess.
Not about the Bionicle, I'm sure.
Well, what I read here, which is kind of weird, is that they actually sort of leaked this last year, and I don't remember hearing anything about this last year. The guys who were responsible for Cloudy with a Chance of Meatballs, which I don't know if you guys have seen, but I really enjoyed that movie. And then one of the guys from Robot Chicken is on there. So... he worked on the Happy Feet movies and is handling animation. So as far as plot, though, they don't have a lot of details. Here's how they described it. The writers talked about making a super large-scale brick film starring minifigs interacting in a completely all-Lego environment. So very vague, you know. So I don't know what the deal with this is going to be. What's your guys' interest in a Lego movie? I mean, I enjoy playing with Legos, but I don't think they're going to drive me into the theater.
I'd really have to see how it ends up looking.
Yeah.
So
Well, Legos are huge down here right now, so we can't even talk about it. Yeah. Because Legoland just opened between here and Orlando. So Lego is all we hear for about since the summertime. It just opened October 15th. So all I hear is Lego, Lego, Lego. Because they're pumping it all over the region to try to get people to go there.
Lego mania, huh?
Yeah. So I haven't heard. My brother took his kids to Busch Gardens last week, so they haven't had a chance to go to Legoland yet.
Gotcha.
But that's been one of the things. So I hear Lego all the time. So if there was a Lego movie, none of us would be surprised in Central Florida. I'll tell you that much. We'd be like, oh, it's another Lego thing.
Right now. Interesting.
So, well, we've always had like the Legoland shops and stuff like at the Mall of America and and such. So we've had places which had the big Lego constructs. But amusement park, that's something interesting. But and now live action movie.
Great. Yes.
Anyways, all I can say is welcome back, Billy.
Yeah.
Eddie Murphy was scheduled to be this year's Oscar host. Then they decided to nix that. And well, who come back then?
He stepped down.
Yeah. I was going to say, do you? You guys don't listen to Howard Stern at all, do you?
No, I didn't watch. I didn't.
Okay. Well, Mr. Ratner, who was originally going, film director Brett Ratner was going to be one of the co-producers of the Oscars this year, as the Academy was attempting to sort of get a fresh, younger perspective on the Oscar Academy Award show. And as part of that, Brett is really good friends with Eddie Murphy. So he, I believe, had asked Eddie to host, and he had agreed. Well, Mr. Ratner went on the Howard Stern show about a week ago. Maybe a week ago yesterday, and he had a very revealing interview with Mr. Stern about some of his proclivities and past girlfriends, and it just erupted this huge controversy with some of the things. He talked about his, sex habits and encounters with Lindsay Lohan and all. I mean, he was just like letting it all go.
Wow.
So I guess the Academy was not too pleased. So they sort of, it was one of those things where it's like, we're not going to fire you, but we'd really like you to resign.
Yeah.
So he
we'll let you take some dignity.
Right. So he resigned as being producer. And then I think Mr. Murphy, in a sign of like solidarity with his friend, stepped down. So then, of course, the whole thing, well, who are they going to get? And well, why not go back to Mr. Crystal? He's only done it, 8 or 9 times already.
I saw that note out there that I think that they should have gone for the Muppets. The Muppets would have been great.
That would have been hilarious. I didn't even hear anything about that. Was that serious? Yeah.
I saw it on Facebook. I think it was on Facebook. It was like a petition to have the Muppets host the Oscars.
That would have been sweet.
That would have been a lot of work.
I know.
That would have been a crap ton of work.
They definitely would have attracted a younger audience, though.
Oh, I'm not sure about that. But, I mean, when you look at like the hosts of the Oscars before, didn't like Bob Hope do it like 10 times or something? 59, 60, 61, 64, 65, 66, 67. Apparently there was no host for 3 years.
They just sort of did their own thing.
I don't know. It just says no host. Bob Hope came back in 77. Johnny Carson had 4 years. Billy Crystal did 89.
I'm just, 90, 91,
as, 92.
As much as I remember, I remember when Billy Crystal was the consummate host there for a long time, because that was back when City Slickers and stuff like that was big. And where's he been lately?
Yeah.
That's why I'm kind of like, Eddie made sense this year since he's in a couple movies.
But I'm kind of like, here's the thing, though. I don't think it matters personally.
Yeah.
You know, that he's a host who's well known. actor, whether he's done something recently or not, really doesn't matter. He's just well known. He's there. He does a great job at doing it. And hey, it's a nice yearly gig if he can get it.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean,
maybe even going back and forth with Whoopi Goldberg, which he practically did during
Whoopi,
the 90s.
Yeah, Whoopi was good too.
Yeah, it's pretty much Whoopi and Billy were dominating the Oscar hosting duties of the 90s. Mm-hmm. It pretty much jumped between those two, and David Letterman, I think, was like the throw-in.
Oh. 94.
Uma, Oprah, Oprah, Uma. Oh.
Steve Martin did it in 2000. Whoopi did it again in 2001. Martin back in 2002. Billy Crystal back in 2003. Then they had Chris Rock, Jon Stewart, Ellen DeGeneres, Jon Stewart, Hugh Jackman, Alec Baldwin, and Steve Martin. And then, of course, Franco and Hathaway, which, well, that was kind of an utter disaster, wasn't it?
Yeah. So Bob Hope leads the pack with 18. Billy Crystal 9, Johnny Carson 5, Jack Lemmon 4, Whoopi Goldberg 4, Conrad Nagel 3, Jerry Lewis 3, David Niven 3, and Steve Martin at 3. So those are your notable.
So Billy Crystal is kind of the Bob Hope of the era, apparently.
Yeah, it seems to be.
At least Oscar wise. So he just needs to do 9 more and he's good.
Maybe
18's that kind of cutoff time.
Yeah, I was like, maybe he'll get a movie then.
Maybe.
Ooh.
Oh, sorry, Billy.
Snap. I don't know. Maybe he's going to end up being the yearly gig. He's going to be the yearly guy they go to. Maybe they'll do the switch off with Whoopi, throw Whoopi in. I don't know. I like Whoopi.
I just find the whole thing amusing how they were so like, oh, we need to get somebody who's sort of edgy and will appeal to younger people. And then when he did something edgy and, controversial, they were just so far to be like, oh, no, we can't deal with this. We're going to go back to Billy.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, we brought in, two young Hollywood people to really pull in the youngins, and we're going to bring in the old fogey again.
Well, from my understanding now that I've really looked at this, Eddie Murphy did not have to step down.
No, he chose.
He could have gone on, you know.
No, he chose to go with his friend. So
right. He chose to do that. So he could have still have been the host for the 2011 Academy Awards, but he chose not to. So, oh, well. So who do we go to? Well, let's go through a good standby. Billy Crystal, let's bring him back. He hasn't been back since 2003.
He needs a job.
Jeez, you are being harsh, Steven.
Sorry.
Maybe he's just, he's made enough money, he's relaxing,
He's being selective with his projects.
Oh, okay.
He doesn't need any more money.
Right.
So he's probably doing this as a friend or something.
Right.
But that's news. Moving on. Into the past.
You're telling me that you built a time machine out of a DeLorean?
For a board game that was made in 1940-something during World War II, we're watching a movie based off of that board game that takes place in 1953? Was it?
1954, I think.
That's close. That's Clue. Starring directed by Jonathan Lynn, starring Tim Curry, Madeline Kahn, Christopher Lloyd, Martin Mull, and Lee Ving. Is that really his name? No, I don't think so.
Yeah, it was actually. He was a singer in a punk rock band. So he wasn't an actor. He wasn't a professional actor.
You could tell.
Yeah.
I didn't think it was that bad.
Well, I mean, okay.
I mean, no, I agree. He wasn't that great, but
yeah.
He wasn't like a complete and utter disaster, and he didn't have to do much.
Yeah, but when you put him up against the rest of the cast, that was very experienced. But,
The movie was barely about him.
Yes. Yeah. There's a little trivia blurb here. The actor playing Mr. Body is the frontman of the punk band Fear and was chosen because his name is Lee Ving. Mr. Body will be leaving soon.
Yes.
So, there you go.
Cute.
And that sort of decision making sets the stage for the rest of this movie.
And of course, Wadsworth, played by Tim Curry, who was amazing in this movie, was actually John Cleese was considered to be playing that role first. I will tell you this. I can't see him playing this role at all. Yeah. Like, I can see him do, you know, you remember him as R, the new Q in some of the James Bond movies. I thought he did the role well, great. He was able to do the witty comments and still be that stiff, serious type of guy. But Wadsworth, while he has that points, he also has this more charm, which I can't really see John Cleese doing.
Yeah, see, which the thing about a John Cleese performance that you would have probably seen more of is that he would have probably ad-libbed a lot more, and it probably would have been pretty funny. Okay. Because that's the kind of performer John Cleese is. Give him, you know, things to work with, and he's pretty brilliant in comedic roles. So I don't doubt he would have done a different sort of character, that's to be sure, but I don't doubt that he would have been entertaining. You know,
totally.
But I will agree. I agree. Tim Curry was to me. Well, Tim Curry was the one bright spot in this movie for me.
So. Yeah. And Tim Curry, this was the first movie I remember seeing. I can remember myself seeing post Rocky Horror, where I was like, "That's Tim Curry. That's what he. You know, like that's what he looks like. Right. Exactly. You know, because I'm like." Right. Yeah, I totally remember that, and people were like, "Yeah, that's the guy from Rocky Horror." And I'm like, "What? No,
who, what, where, when, why, how?"
Yeah, I was like, "What?" So
I think my first exposure to Tim Curry was as Rooster in the original Annie movie.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but this, I'm gonna talk about this here now. I had never seen this movie before.
Really? Is this the first showing?
First time I've ever seen it.
Oh, wow. Wow.
I think it's because it's one of those things like the game. I've never played the game.
You never played the game either?
No, I've never played the game. And it never really interests me to play. That's, I guess, why I've never played it. So when the movie...
First question. Yeah. So you were watching on DVD, right?
Yeah.
And it popped up that message. Do you want to have a random ending or all three endings? Which one did you choose?
I don't remember it asking me. I just watched it.
It's got a DVD that I got because mine asked me about that. Did you get three?
Maybe you have the special edition.
I saw them sequentially.
But there were three endings, right?
Yes.
All together.
Right? Yes.
Okay. So you got what would have been the second choice. Otherwise, you would have just seen one of them.
Right. So maybe that's why I never was interested in seeing them. I'm trying to think 1985. You know, I was very much a sci-fi nerd at that point in my life. I mean, this is post Return of the Jedi.
Gotcha.
So I don't think it really blipped on my radar at all. Gotcha. So I just never saw it until now.
Well, my family played Clue.
Mm-hmm.
So when there was a Clue movie, we were all like, ooh. Mm. We never did go see it in the theater. But I remember, you know, being like with my mom and talking about it at some point and being like, oh, my God, it's got three different, you know, reading in People magazine or something, you know, that there's three different endings.
Right.
You know, do we have to go to three different theaters to see the endings? You know, like, so, you know, like that kind of thing. But then my mom was like, we'll just wait for it to come out on video. Maybe have them all on there.
Well, see, that's the thing I wanted to talk about was, all right, this whole concept of having this movie with three different endings. Yeah. Do you think that was a gamble to say, hey, if this movie does well, that maybe it'll be a thing where people go see it at least three times to see the three different endings? Or people will try to see, like, it almost made it sound like there was at some point like a sort of way to identify which movie at which theater had which ending, but then they were sort of not too forthcoming? Well, I when it comes to movies like this, I tend to go back and sort of look at reviews after I watch it. I'll go back and look at reviews from around the time that it came out. So, you know, one person's a good site for that is to go to Roger Ebert, because he has every review he's ever done posted. So I was breezing through his, and that's where the sort of question sort of came up, because and I'll just sort of try to paraphrase this. He goes, because as a practicing movie critic, I got to see all three endings, which involve manic explanations by the butler who reconstructs the crimes while everybody races around the mansion and down secret passageways. My obligation now is to tell you which of the three endings you should try to see, but that will be harder than it sounds. I was informed that the newspaper ads for the movie will contain the letters A, B, or C, denoting which ending is being shown at which theater. I was then told which ending each of those three letters stands for. On the basis of my information, ending A is the one to go for, more fun, more satisfying. But then at the last minute, Paramount called back to say they weren't sure whether they were right about which endings corresponded with which letters.
That's funny. That is funny. I don't remember that there was – I remember people talking about it. Mm-hmm. Which ending did you see? I can remember people talking about it in school.
Oh, okay.
And stuff, like, you know, if they went to go see it. I never saw it in the theater, so but I remember people talking about what did you see and stuff like that. And we tried to figure out, you know, being kids, you know, we tried to figure out, like, so they have this ending at this theater. If you see it at Mission Bell, it's this one. If you see it at this one, it's that one. You know, we were trying to figure it out.
Right.
But, you know, I guess getting away from all of that, you know, it didn't do well.
No.
You know, it really didn't do well. But then, you know, then the cultists all, you know, pick it up. And, you know, now it's one of those, it's a, you know, do you think it got picked up because, you know, it was, you know, another, like a Tim Curry movie, you know, or do you think it got picked up because of the cast?
I think something I read had said that it got popular more when all three endings were there all at once.
Sure. Mm-hmm.
So you had the see, that's one way that it could have happened, or it could have happened this way.
Yeah.
Then you basically get another joke in here by having these three different endings. But the main point of the, in some sense, that's the punchline, but, mm-hmm. and it's also kind of the goal of the game. You know, when you think about it, this is the game tie-in. It could go any way. It could be Mr. Body in the hall with a revolver, or Mr. Green in the hall with a revolver, as it is in the last ending.
Right.
You know, it could be Miss Scarlet. It could be Mrs. Peacock, and with the revolver in the hall.
Yeah.
But it has, the game itself has these different options of what could be the end result.
Right.
So that's kind of their way of tying it into the game. They have all the rooms associated with the game. They have all the people associated with the game. They have all the weapons associated with the game. Yeah. Then it's just talking about a murder mystery. But then you have to find out who done it. Well, with the game, it could be anyone. And mm-hmm. so they show three different endings to show that.
Well, and for not having played the game, mm-hmm. Ray... Mm-hmm. When you put it all together and do everything, you know, quite often what happens is when you go to make your first guess, you know, you have to eliminate
right.
the truth. You know mm-hmm. what I mean? You have to pay attention and all that kind of stuff. But then you might go, you know, it's this person in the hall with this weapon or something. And then you might get that guess wrong. And so you have to pay attention and write down right. what you think was wrong. Mm-hmm. So, you know, so the whole thing about, like, here's how it could have happened.
Right.
Or here's another way it could have happened. You know, that's like you're eliminating your, you
right.
know, the pieces.
And even though I've never played the game, I think it's yeah. been pervasive enough in our culture that I sort yeah. of got that
yeah. okay.
impression, you know. So I sort of walked away. I think, and I agree somewhat with Mr. Ebers thing, where he said that they should have just, instead of doing the three random endings, like you didn't know which one you were going to get when you went to see it, that they should have done it like the DVD where they just had all three.
Yeah.
And then it would have been, it sort of makes more sense in the vein of this is a sort of tribute to the game, you know, mm-hmm. whereas and it's just one thing and then it's over. You know, I think I appreciated that, seeing the three different ones back to back, more than if I would have just seen, not known that there were three endings and just saw one, I think I would have, you know, been just like, okay, yeah. You know, it sort of adds to, I think, the whole overall feel of the movie when you see all three.
Yeah.
That was the one thing, and it's sort of a passive aggressive little dig here at the end of this review that he says, you know, distributed at random among theaters, it is a measure of the film's success that it doesn't much matter which ending you see.
Ouch.
Nice. Yeah. So, yeah, I think to me they would have been better if they had all three in every viewing. So,
well, I agree with you. I mean, you didn't see that concept. They were trying mm-hmm. to do something different mm-hmm. and it just failed.
Right.
You know, at least at the theater.
Mm-hmm.
But the one thing I give them credit for, though, is they had an amazing cast. The cast as a whole, you know, like, I mean, anything with Madeline Kahn, come on, you know, and then, I always think of her from this way. I think of anyone that's the, you know, they have the drill sergeant from Sergeant Benjamin. You know what I mean? Like, she's Mrs. Peacock.
Mm-hmm.
And by the way, finding out that she did that movie after she had had a car accident that mm-hmm. terribly disfigured her, that's pretty amazing.
Right.
But, you know, but as far as the cast goes, they had a really amazing cast.
Oh,
and,
I agree.
And they all did a really good job of really living into their, you know, into their character and really giving those characters life.
Right. I mean, I'm going to say that I think they did a good job with the material they were given. Like,
absolutely. Yeah.
You know,
it felt more like, have you ever seen Noises Off?
Mm-mm.
Okay.
Yes, I need to see it again because I keep forgetting. Yeah, that's
something we should put on somewhere.
Oh, yes.
It reminds me, if you see Noises Off,
mm-hmm.
You could, the movie Noises Off, you could totally kind of compare it a little bit to this.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's another mystery kind of thing like that. But Noises Off is also a play. Okay. So I could also see it was a play before it was a movie. So I could totally see Clue having been a play, with the way that they move around and stuff.
Well, yet they do have a musical.
Yeah, it did feel terrible, sort of. Apparently. This movie did sort of have that. Well, it has that sort of mystery dinner theater feel to it.
Yeah,
you know absolutely. What I mean?
Yeah.
So, but I totally just thought that, you know, hey, that's on purpose. That's kind of where. You know, that's what the game, I thought the game Clue was sort of trying to emulate, was that sort of, you know, that sort of experience.
And just an example, the movie version of Noises Off has these cast members: Michael Caine,
mm-hmm.
John Ritter, mm-hmm. Carol Burnett, Christopher Reeve, and Nicolette Sheridan, and Denholm Elliott as the main cast. So I know at least four of those.
Right. Six. Well, on paper, you know, very strong cast, sounds
yeah,
like.
Yeah, exactly.
And if I remember it correctly, because it's been a long time since I've seen this, Noises Off has a similar type thing where it has this three different types of seeing things. At least maybe it was the play, or maybe they also do it for it. Because there's one time where they're basically doing this one act play or something, and they showed the front of the stage some things that happened in the front. Maybe it was during a rehearsal or something for the play. Then they show it backstage during an actual performance, and shenanigans are going on at that point in time. And meanwhile, Michael Caine's character, the actual director, has like for this performance, I think it's supposed to be the opening night performance or the last performance or something, he's like, oh my god, this is going to be a complete and utter disaster, I can't believe this, I can't watch this. So he's off, he comes back, and everything went perfectly without any problems. So it's a really interesting dynamic on how they presented it, because they have like this, because they do this in the stage play. They actually have the set forwards in one scene, backwards in the other. And I don't remember what the last version is like, but it's pretty interesting. So definitely going to have that. Oh, in May.
Yeah. Okay. Some point in May. But yeah, but I think you, but I just think that it comes off very stagey.
But it's one of those things where it's a slapstick comedy, but it's still kind of intelligent, if that makes any sense. So,
you never know what's a clue, you know, and that tells you from the, that's the name of the movie. Mm-hmm. So you never know what is the, you know, when you first see this movie, it's like, so what are the clues?
Mm-hmm.
You know, and then sort of at the end when Tim Curry is kind of explaining all the different things, like especially like the monkey brains and, you know, like communism is just a red herring. That's hilarious. I thought that would end up being the title of the show. But all different things, you know, you start putting things together and you're like, how are these people related? Oh, why did she look at her like that? Oh, why did he do that to her? You know, those kind of things. You never know what clues you're going to pick up on to help solve the mystery.
Oh, yeah. So you know each other. Ta-da!
Exactly. Exactly.
But I was like, that title of the show is based off of the fact says you why do you have J. Edgar Hoover on your phone? Why do you have J. Edgar Hoover on your phone? Well, he's on everybody else's. Why should he be on mine?
Right, exactly.
So that's actually supposed to be my Hoover reference.
Hoover.
Right, Ollian.
Got a lot of Hoover in this episode.
As I told you, this movie sucks. Anyways, or this show sucks.
Wow.
There's a lot of Hoover. Anyways, bad, terrible, terrible joke. I know. I'm sorry.
You're so punny.
We don't have Eddie Murphy in this movie. Yeah. I'm trying to think of something else. Favorite ending. How about that? Let's talk about those three different endings. Did you have a favorite? Which one did you like the best? Did you think that Miss Scarlet did it? Do you really think that it's all her? How about Miss Peacock? Or do you like that they all did it and Mr. Green was not actually gay?
I don't really care that Mr. Green was gay or not gay, but I would say that I thought as a sort of, I don't know, as a sort of spoof on itself, I think that the third ending was the most enjoyable for me.
That was all of them did it.
Yes.
I like the second one, Miss Peacock.
Miss Peacock's ending is my favorite. Yeah.
Yeah, it's my favorite. I think one part about it is the guests run out and says, like the Mounties, we always get our man.
Mm-hmm.
Mrs. Peacock was a man? Slap, slap.
Yeah, exactly.
That would have been a great way to end that movie. So if I saw it and only saw one, that would be the one I would have wanted to see. So, anything else? Got anything covered?
No.
Okay, so what we've learned? We've learned cars get frightened. Or actually, cars get frightened. A double negative leads to proof positive. I'm afraid you gave yourself away. J. Edgar Hoover is on everyone's phone. And monkey brains are a Cantonese delicacy. This is one of my favorite movies of all time. Well put together, well acted, and cleverly written. It hits all my buttons. Everyone should see this at least once.
Like I said, I really enjoyed Tim Curry in this. If he had not been here for this movie, I think I would have been hard-pressed to watch it. But it's hard for somebody not to shine when the rest of the movie's kind of eh. The cast looked incredible on paper, but the total execution sort of left me wanting. I'll take my favorite sleuthing movie, which is The Private Eyes, over this one any day.
Never seen it, but unless.
Yeah.
I've always enjoyed this movie, so I definitely think it's because of the variety of characters, and I find them really fun, and I really enjoy Tim Curry's performance. I would just sum it up as just saying, if you want a real murder mystery kind of thing, see something else. This is really can't be fun. So, have fun.
Yeah, definitely not an actual detective murder mystery movie.
Right.
Anyways. Moving on. Into the present.
When does this happen in the movie?
Now. You're looking at now, sir. Everything that happens now is happening now.
Jedgar. Starring Leonardo DiCaprio, Armie Hammer, and Amy Watts. Directed by Clint Eastwood. Basically, the story of J. Edgar Hoover. Or a very subtle story about J. Edgar Hoover being a homosexual. I swear to God, this movie wasn't about his life. It was about his homosexuality. I swear to God. It was all very... Well, no, it wasn't subtle. It was actually flat out blatant to me. I couldn't believe how much... I was surprised at how much they had these things just show up about it. I mean, especially Clyde Tolson, played by Armie Hammer, the Winklevoss twins. And every single time he mentioned some sort of gay stereotype thing, like it says, we have a better fashion sense or something like
right.
that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. You know, it was this kind of hiding it, but not hiding it sort of thing. Where right. they just had these moments, these subtle moments, which to me, and maybe it's just because I'm gay, just kind of shine like a spotlight. I was like, I thought this movie was just going to be something about J. Edgar Hoover's time as the director of the FBI.
Yeah,
and they were going to just bypass this whole gay cross-dressing thing. In fact, there was barely any cross-dressing.
There was one minute reference to it. Yeah.
And in some sense, I can understand that moment. But from my understanding about the whole cross-dressing thing, he did that a lot more than that one time.
Well, see, that's one of my – you know, I just got done reading the Steve Jobs biography. And so I'm looking at this sort of under this weird light of like being sort of super critical of biographical material, because I'm sitting there going, okay, you know, it's always been, it was always rumored and, you know, that Hoover was gay and that, you know, him and his deputy had this relationship. But I'm like, when I sit there and look at it, I'm like, what we're watching on the screen, you know, it's all sort of over dramatized. Like, I have no idea if any of those actual moments ever happened or were witnessed by anybody, you know?
Well, this wasn't exactly a documentary. I mean, I went into this understanding that it was a fictionalized account of J. Edgar Hoover's life. I didn't expect this to be like 100% true.
Right. I agree with you.
So, you know, I'm looking at it from that sort of perspective, though. I might be, you know, being sort of hypercritical of that. Just because it's like, to me, it seems sort of, I don't know. It seemed like they, for the amount of, I don't know if you guys read any of the interviews with DiCaprio or Eastwood when they were talking about this film and, you know, Mr. Eastwood especially sort of played off the whole, you know, whether or not he was gay thing. Like, that's not what this movie's going to be about, and we're not really spending a whole lot of time on it. And
we're just referencing some things. Right, and I was like, they did not reference a damn thing here. Right. They just straight up were like, he's a big old cocksucker, peoples.
Right.
Like,
so that remembering that too sort of was kind of like, I'm like, what the hell is he talking about? He's like, I mean, there's some straight up moments in this movie, like, you know. Yeah. So I don't know. So I guess what made me sort of annoyed, though, and I mean, overall, I mean, the whole movie sort of made me sad.
Yeah.
Watching the whole thing, and if any of that was true and that was the way that he had to live his life, you know, of course that makes me sort of sad for him and you know, for his deputy, because they never got to be you know, the people they were. They had to put on this, you know, this whole thing. So I sort of walked out of the movie sort of kind of bummed out a little bit. But I was overly annoyed only because I felt that the movie sort of seemed like it was highlighting, like, his accomplishments. Like, things he did. Like, or the way he manipulated.
Manipulated, that's the word.
Manipulated things to make it seem like he was more involved with them than he was, which I totally get after reading the Steve Jobs biography. Because that man was, like, the master of taking other people's ideas and making them sound like they were his, or, you know what I mean? But so I was more sort of annoyed, though, because I was expecting maybe for them to sort of delve into the man himself. Like, why was he that way? You know, what was it about his, like, the interaction between him and his mother seemed like it would be so interesting, but they just touched on little tiny pieces of it, you know?
Yeah. Like her disdain at him being gay.
Right.
He tried to come, he was almost about to come out to her.
Right. And daffy.
You know? Yeah, exactly.
I'd rather have a dead son than a daffodil.
Yeah.
You know, powerful line there. Powerful line, which really resonated with me. Well, that particular line really resonated with me only because I didn't have an experience to that brutal of a degree with a particular family member, but I did have someone in my family tell me something very similar once. So that line really resonated with me. And I think that whole Judi Dench's performance was brilliant. And I would have loved to see more of his sort of interaction with her, more of his time growing up. But I don't know if they had, you know, any material to generate stuff from, or if that would have just been completely fictional. You know what I mean? Right.
I think that's the most difficult part of this.
Right.
What's fictional and what's not.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I think that's the more complicated part of this. Although I have to say that I did feel going into this movie it was going to be one thing, or I had a perception it would be one thing. And I think I would probably say, too, the audience thought the same thing. Because I saw it on a Saturday after it had been open. So it was pretty full theater. Not packed, but and it was mostly gray hairs. I'm not gonna lie. You know what I mean? It was mostly people probably that really knew who J. Edgar Hoover was or were familiar with his thing. So it wasn't a young crowd.
Right.
You know, that kind of thing. So I really do feel like people were just stunned. Like, I felt like the audience was just like, what the what?
Right.
You know, like there was a reaction.
Did they have a strong reaction?
Yes. Okay. And I even Facebooked about it. One reaction that really, I mean, I was almost felt completely uncomfortable in the theater. There was an audible gasp, like when did the kiss, during the kiss.
Okay.
Like the whole audience was like, I was like, oh my God. Like it was like in several different places.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, oh Jesus Christ, am I going to get like bashed right here? I mean, I was like sitting here with my friends. There's like seven gay men sitting in a row.
Right.
You know what I mean? Like we're like looking at each other like, hopefully nobody turns to us and is like, you know, like, but it was quite an action, you know, and I was just kind of looking around and like, there was just stoicism. Like once all that kind of stuff started going, people were just like,
yeah,
and I heard people talking about it as they walked out. So I think that they don't really hint to they don't give much away at all in the trailer. Right. So when you go into it, I'm not saying they need to put a warning, but what I think they are trying to say, and I do think that Eastwood's trying to say, is this is life, people, get over it.
Right.
No, yeah, and I'm happy with that. But I was frustrated as a human being with the reaction that the audience had.
Right.
Do you know what I mean? Like, I'm like, Jesus Christ, they just kissed. It's not like they just fucked on screen.
Right.
You know what I mean? Like, get over it.
You know what? I have a few, like, my, the reaction, I had a smaller audience. There was maybe 10 other people in the theater besides me. And they were mostly older. Not as quite as old as, say, my parents, but they were probably in their 50s, you know, maybe 60s. No audible gasps during anything. Maybe a few uncomfortable snickers a couple times, I think, yeah. But nothing like But you know what? I can honestly think that if my father was, you know, because I thought about taking my dad, because I'm like, you know, my dad is, you know, he was a kid in the, you know, in the 40s, you know, so that whole sort of like comic book thing about the G-Men and all that, I think my dad was really wrapped up in that.
Oh, yeah.
So I almost wonder if, like, people from my dad's generation, and my dad's going to be 76, if, you know, I wonder if they were sort of aware of the rumors about him, but still sort of maybe played them off, like, you know, because that was the sort of thing that you didn't really talk about and didn't think about or whatever. So I think for him, even it still makes him uncomfortable, you know. Mm-hmm. Not that he hates gay people or anything. My dad has nothing, you know, he's not against, but I still think there's that level of being uncomfortable that's just been ingrained in them for so long that when they are presented with something like that, that they just have a sort of kind of a gut reaction to it. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah,
they've been trained for most of their lives that is something that's, you know, scandalous, and you know it's not something you would watch, and they're presented with it, so it's like, oh my, you know.
Yeah,
so I didn't have that sort of reaction in my show, but they were pretty stoic about a lot of stuff. I will agree with that. But the thing I found interesting, though, is, like, as I kept watching this movie, there were two themes that sort of resonated with me. One was the sort of, you know, the obvious thing of, like, you have this this guy who is this, I guess you could, I don't want to throw the word conservative out there, but I would imagine that the director of the FBI is a somewhat conservative fellow that's sort of leading a double life or is hiding a big secret that, like, may bring him down. And, you know, we see things like that all the time when, you know, things come out in the news. And so there was that sort of theme that was resonating with me. And then there was also the whole theme, like, if you were to take the name radical and remove it and put in the word terrorist.
Right.
It would just totally, it could be totally a story that was going on today. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like,
well, I'm with you on the issue, the theme of secrets, because one of the things I walked away in my own personal analysis of the film thought of was the fact that he had these secrets that probably a lot of people knew.
Right.
Because it didn't seem like he and Clyde, according to this movie, really hid the fact that they went to places together. You know, they met for lunch every Friday. They had their... You know, their relationship was kind of out there without people actually saying that they're a couple. So there was stuff out there like that. Mm-hmm. And then he had secrets on everybody else.
Right.
Too. Right. So he knew. So he was more or less blackmailing people to keep his secret.
I think it's a matter of
information as power.
I think he was holding it over people so that he could get what he wanted.
Right. He totally did that. But at the same time, if he was going to go down, they were going to go down.
Right.
You know, he used
that a lot, you know.
Yeah. So, I mean, he would make sure he told them, I know I have stuff on you, or I have stuff on your brother, you know, or I have stuff on, you know. Right. So I thought that was quite. I don't know how I felt about that. Do you know what I mean? Like, I was like, that's manipulative.
Oh, totally.
I mean, I can't imagine going into my boss and being like, hey, look, I know this about you, so I need $50,000 more dollars for my budget. You know what I mean? Like, right. I can't imagine, like,
cough it up or it's going on Facebook.
Right, exactly. You know, like, I just can't imagine being that diabolical.
Yeah. It definitely didn't paint him in a very good light.
Yeah. Know? Yeah.
So, especially when it's sort of, when he gets read the Riot Act, you know, then, you know, he goes, you know, you said that you arrested this guy and you weren't even there.
Oh, right.
And you didn't get out of the car. And then it's just kind of like all this stuff comes flooding out that it's like, oh, okay. It had like its Fight Club moment.
Yeah.
You know, or here's what we showed you, but here's what really happened.
Yeah. Clyde was just like, look, you know, like you know, you've lied about all this. You didn't even do it.
Which is sort of like another thing of him saying, look, I know your secret. You didn't do all this stuff.
Yeah.
And, you know, I could tell people, you know, how would you like it if I told everybody that, you know, you hid in the car when this agent went and arrested this guy, you know?
Yeah.
So, yeah, I guess it totally keeps with the whole theme of secrets.
Secrets and lies.
Yep.
That was a piece of it. Oh gosh, I had one other thing that just came to mind. Crap, and of course I'm going to forget it right now. Yeah, it was actually good. It was a good one. Yeah.
I would say the only other thing that I wanted to ask you guys about was, what did you think of the makeup, the old makeup?
That was kind of where I was going to go.
Not so hot.
No, did not like at all.
Really? I liked it better on Naomi Watts than I did on Leo.
Yes.
But it was better on Leo than it was on
I felt like I was watching like Jackass when what's his name got the old man makeup on. Like, it was just like, ugh, it's creepy and I don't like it. And
yeah.
Yes, they definitely aged Naomi Watts much more realistically, I guess. Or gracefully. I don't know how to word it.
Yeah. Maybe gracefully is the word.
Gracefully is probably the word.
Because
she looks so much younger than the other two.
Yeah. Because Armie Hammer definitely looked, I mean, I was just like, holy crap, they turned him into a walking corpse with sunspots.
Yes.
Basically. I mean, he couldn't even move.
Right.
He was like, aw. It was like Frankenstein, aw, with liver spots. Aw. You know, I was like, that's evil.
I totally found it distracting, you know. So I kept focusing, whenever they would jump to a scene when they were old, I kept like focusing on the makeup, like, oh, I almost wish they would have done it CG or something. I don't know how they did it, but it was distracting.
Mm-hmm. Agreed.
So, and so, then I was going to say, did you enjoy, I know Steve's big on accents. Were you okay with the vocal performances?
Yeah. I mean, he was playing kind of that Boston-y, Northeasterner thing.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, he did okay.
Okay.
You know, and he stayed consistent. He didn't fall in and out of it. That's one of the things that really drives me crazy.
Unless it was on purpose, because he did have a, I guess that he had some sort of speech.
Right. When he had to do the speech, you know, his speech impediment. I mean, I think, and Armie Hammer did a good job being gay with his gay voice. He did bring it up a little bit.
Yes.
To sound a little haughty.
I think we should have dinner every day.
Right, exactly.
As long as you promise me,
girl,
dinner, lunch, and dinner every day.
It was like, girl, you've
never had to. Me.
I can't believe.
I still felt he sounded like a Winklevoss, but that's just me.
Mm-hmm.
Or maybe I'm just saying that the Winklevoss twins are gay. Anyways, so what have we learned from this movie? We've learned fame, if unchecked, leads to villainy. What determines a man's legacy is often never seen. The ladies appreciate facial hair. And Senator McCarthy was an opportunist, not a patriot. Sometimes you need to bend the rules a little to keep your country safe. Administration can't fill the spot love goes, or warm your bed.
Admiration.
and admiration. One of the two. Anyways, solid weight looks good on a man. Anyways, this movie surprised me in how much I actually ended up enjoying it. Still a little iffy on DiCaprio's vocal performance. He still sounded like Leonardo DiCaprio, but enjoyed it overall. Also surprised at all the homosexual references and undertones. I think it's a worth see, but pretty sure it'll end up in the GLBT category for subject. When you go searching for it, that's where you'll find it.
Yeah, and as I'm rereading my recommendation here, I'm really sounding really critical here, and like I didn't enjoy the movie. I did overall enjoy the film. I did find parts of it slow. And the structure when they were jumping from one time period to the other and going, I would have appreciated a little maybe tell me what time all this stuff is happening.
Yes. One of my friends and I talked about that specific thing. I was like, it felt very Tarantino. I didn't know when it was going on.
We're jumping all over the place. Yeah.
He said it would have been nice to have at least like 1955 or 1937, right. You know, like in the corner or something. Yeah.
Right. The makeup was a distraction for me, as I said. But I found the message of the movie is still sort of relevant. You know, especially with, like I said, you could replace the word radical with terrorist. But ultimately, I was a little bit disappointed because I felt it focused too much on sort of what he did on his actions and not his ultimate motivations for doing what he did, which I wanted to get into more of.
Mm-hmm. I found the first 45 minutes to an hour were utterly boring, and I nodded on and off a little bit, I'm not going to lie. But once I woke up, I enjoyed the rest of it. I typically like biopics to a point, but I think what I wanted to see in this was not what I ended up seeing. Mm-hmm. You know, I wanted to hear more about the FBI, like the build of the FBI and the kinds of things that they did to really kind of gain hold in America, you know, and the moves he made to make it more of a big thing. Mm-hmm. Not just about all the secrets he had about other people and his personal secrets that were in the closet, you know, those kind of things. That, you know, there was a lot more I wished I could have seen out of this movie. And I felt like a little caught off guard. So.
Yeah, I thought the whole part about with like Stephen Root and the forensic lab, pretty fascinating.
I would have loved to know more about that stuff.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they talk about the president. They were like, you know, Nixon wants to start his own, you know, police force. You know, I'm like, okay, wow. You know, like the Secret Service. Okay, cool. You know, I mean, like, I want to hear more about what, why does he have a problem with the Secret Service? You know, like, I want to hear more about that. I didn't care that you guys wanted to go to dinner on Friday night. You know, I mean, I really wanted to hear a little more about that, but that's just my interest stuff, so.
Hmm. Nope.
Yeah, I just thought it was more gay than I thought it would be. In any case, moving on into the future.
Hi, welcome to the future. And I'm telling you, it's great here.
The Muppets.
Phenomena. Phenomena.
Stop.
He's like,
no. Not doing it.
Directed by James Bowden, starring Amy Adams, Jason Segel, Chris Cooper, Kermit the Frog, Miss Piggy,
Fozzie the Bear,
Ralph is in there, the Shrimp. I can't even think of his Pepe the Shrimp.
Pepe.
The Swedish Chef.
The Swedish Fish.
Gonzo.
Gonzo is in there, and we
saw Animal.
I didn't see an Elmo in sight, so I'm happy for that.
He's Elmo? A Sesame Street.
Yeah, he's down in the hood, so.
Yeah. Summary. Yeah.
So three Muppet fans learn that Tex Richmond wants to drill under the Muppet Theater for oil. Gary, Mary, and Walter, the new Muppet, by the way, set out to find the Muppets who have been split up for years.
So the whole trying to save the theater thing, I think they've used this theme quite a few times over the years. definitely not the first time we've heard that story. Yeah. I find the whole, like, the Muppets split up thing sort of amusing, especially if you go further in and find out, like, Kermit's a millionaire. Miss Piggy's, like, working on the Vogue Paris for plus-sized women, you know. So there's all the animals in anger management rehab. So there's some interesting things here that they're doing with the characters, I think, to sort of modernize, you know, what they're up to. And first off, let me say that the marketing for this film, especially the early trailers, brilliant. Absolutely yeah. brilliant.
If it doesn't do well, it's not for the marketing.
Oh, God. I can't go anywhere without seeing something with Muppets in it. I mean, yeah. they're all over YouTube. Even,
if you go to an AMC, you get the mm-hmm. quiet, you know, Miss yes. Piggy.
Bursty, bursty, popcorn. Yeah, the two today, old dudes.
I went to the Alamo Draft House, I had Dolph Lundgren threatening for me to shut up. Otherwise, he will come in and break me. Yeah. So that's the kind of stuff I get, or Homestar Runner saying, shuts up.
Nice. No, I like that that one ends with the two old dudes and they're like, you know, go see the Muppets in the theater. Well, yeah, you don't want to let them into your home.
You can see it on YouTube, Jeff. It's on YouTube, too.
Yeah, it's pretty cute. Good. But yeah, the Muppets are all over, which to me is a good thing. I like the Muppets. I'm glad that they're sort of getting their exposure again. You know, they seem to. I mean, they've been in like, I don't know, 8 or 9 movies, and the last one wasn't terribly long ago, I don't think. Was that the space one? Were they Muppets in space or something?
Yeah, that was the ones where Gonzo found out he was an alien.
Yeah.
Let's see here. Muppets.
I'm just trying to remember if they've... I was thinking about this. Have they been owned by Disney since they did any of the movies other than this one?
Okay, the last one was The Muppets Wizard of Oz in 2005. Muppets from Space was 1999, so that one was quite a while ago.
Okay.
But, hold on, let me see. Who owned them, this one? They were distributed by Walt Disney Studios.
Okay.
But I think that, well, how long is... Because Disney and ABC are butt buddies, right?
Yeah. They've been forever.
Right.
Well, that's because Disney owns ABC.
Right, right. I understand
that. That's why they're a nice big buddy.
That's where we used to watch the Saturday Disney movies
mm-hmm.
as kids.
Yeah. I'm not exactly sure when they became a total...
That's what I was trying to remember, when they became a franchise, you know, of Disney. Because they've made it very clear with this one, if you notice. Mm-hmm. They're Disney's The Muppets.
Let's see.
And it used to be Jim Henson's The Muppets. So you remember that.
Well, Jim Henson hasn't been around for a while.
So. Well, I know that, but I'm just my point being that they were Jim Henson's.
Walt Disney bought the Muppets in 2004.
Okay.
So that would have been that 2005, the Wizard of Oz one would have been their first Disney-fied experience.
Because that was one of the things I was wondering, if you guys think that that's going to make a big difference. I mean, some of it feels like it already with Amy Adams. You know, I like Amy Adams. Don't get me wrong. I've always liked Amy Adams.
Mm.
But you can see kind of the Enchanted. There's some moves that she's doing, and you see that there's a scene in one of the trailers of him and her doing a Prince Charming and, you know,
well, it's
a Disney princessy thing, and
it's one of those crazy things that it's like the Muppets have always existed in sort of a hyper realistic world because it's got Muppets in it and people interact with them. So I don't know if they're really going to have. I would be more worried about them censoring sort of jokes, because, you know, the Muppets have always sort of appeal to a large audience because, you know, when they were on the TV, they always had some jokes that were
a little off color
for the adults, you know,
denouement, if you will, you know, it's like
exactly
double entendre.
So that would be my biggest fear, or possibly like the thing I would predict them to change would be like, well, we, you know, they got to Disney-fy it, so it's got to be, you know,
cute and funny,
hyper sanitized. I mean, Disney. I mean, that was what Touchstone was for, was so that Disney could release things that were not have Disney's name attached to them. So usually when Disney attaches their name, they're pretty strict about content. So that would be my only fear, you know. But, I mean, they've been releasing stuff on YouTube that is pretty funny.
Yeah.
You know, true. So I, you know, if they got those guys are all involved in writing and doing stuff, then I'm sort of okay, I guess, for now.
I think they're going to be fine. I think while they are putting the big Disney name on it, one of the big things they're seeing on this is still a family friendly thing, which means that you can take your kids to this. It's perfectly fine. Right. But those people who take it will also, you know, who take their kids will also thoroughly enjoy it because there's going to be some things for them.
Right.
And I really think that Disney understands that this is what the Muppets are. Right. And they understand that when the Muppets do something, they are intending to be a broad audience and that they're going to stick with that. I mean, one example
they can't
would
ruin
be,
the franchise, basically.
Take mine, Marvel. Marvel is owned by Disney as well. While they don't have the Disney name labeled attached to them, like when you go see Thor or Captain America, they are still a Disney-owned property, and they haven't ruined them at all. In fact, they barely even touched them. I think they might be having some influence with the Muppets, but I don't think they're – I mean, it's not going to be much. They're helping to develop, but it's still going to be a Muppet movie, you know?
Right.
So I think it's still going to keep the essence of what the Muppets were. That's one of the reasons why Disney wanted to buy them is like, you do a great job at what you do. Let's get you some more resources. Right. And we'll make some bucks along the way while you're doing what you do. Well, and maybe we'll have some writers that will be able to help you out, but not that necessarily that tone it down sort of way.
Okay. Right. Well, let's just hope that the fact that, you know, like you've got guys like, you know, John Lasseter, who is he's the creative director, the chief creative officer for both Pixar and Walt Disney. Let's hope that, you know, that he's, you know, been able to infuse some of that, you know, Pixar magic into the Disney, you know, mindset. So then I don't think we have to worry at all.
True. You know?
While he's probably not directly, you know, interacting with anything on this project, I would hope that, you know, he's probably been consulted a little bit. I'm sure that all the chief guys at Disney have probably had a little bit, at least seen, you know, parts of this film. And especially I would think somebody like Lasseter has probably been like really, you know, into like, hey, I want to see what they're doing on this Muppets thing. And then maybe, you know, giving them some advice or, you know, that would be good. That would make me happy.
Well, one of the little things that I was trying to figure out is, do you think that it's going to change kind of the focus of any of the characters anymore? Do you know, or do you think they're going to go back to some of the classic stuff? You know, like there's always that, are Miss Piggy and Kermit going to get back together, or, you know, or is the band going to get back? Do you think that's going to be another focus of this? Or do you think they're just going to focus on kind of reestablishing the characters since it's been a while? Since they're kind of bringing it to a new, you know, kind of bringing it to a new audience.
Well, I would almost say that they're sort of, without calling it a reboot, it's more of like a relaunch, you know?
That's fair. Yeah.
They're just a revival. They're calling it the Muppets instead of saying it's, you know, the Muppets do this, or it's just, hey, this is the Muppets. You know, this is, we're going to introduce this, you know, cast of zany characters to, you know, a whole new audience. Cause there's, you know, and it's kind of weird to think that there's, you know, there's whole generations of children who have probably never really been, you know, exposed to the Muppets, you know, unless they've seen one of those movies in the last, you know, 10, 15 years.
Yeah. Which they probably wouldn't have understood when it came out anyway, because they were zygotes.
Right. Right. Exactly.
Yeah. But I have to say, as cruel as it is, I love that last piece of trivia.
Isn't that awesome? Oh, I could just totally imagine being in that room and just having a... Okay, so what we're talking about is like... All right, awesome. there's a bunch of kids that get to visit the set. Well, I guess somebody came up with a bright idea of when the Muppets were not being used, they got put into a large bed so they would look like they were sleeping, quote-unquote sleeping. So there's this whole group of young kids that come to visit the set, and then they saw the characters on the bed, and they're trying to wake them up because, you know, they're sleeping, so I'm going to wake up Kermit. But they all start sobbing when they thought they were dead because they wouldn't wake up. That is just awesome. I am so going to hell for laughing at that. But
I know.
It's like it's God. Terribly awesome.
Funny.
That's one of those things, like, I so wish that maybe it'll be on the Blu-ray or something. Maybe it'll have behind the scenes.
Oh my God.
Children's tears.
Maybe children's tears are what brings them back. I don't know.
if you just clap really hard.
See, the Muppets secret they don't want you to know is that they live off of children's tears.
That's the best right there. And they eat children too. Anyway, just kidding. But yeah, anyway, I put two trailers on here just so everybody knows. One is was kind of the original trailer that we see on TV. And then the second one is the one that's in the theater that most of us are seeing. So they both have a little bit of a different focus.
Okay.
So I thought it was worth putting both of them on here for okay. that reason.
Does either one of them the spoof trailer?
No.
Oh, okay. Because no. To me, that was my favorite one, because it's just like,
was the one second. Where they're like, okay.
Is this a Muppet movie?
We did another spoof trailer.
Yeah, I saw that.
You could do spoofs.
No, the first one is the one where they go into the Muppet Theater. It's about 2 minutes.
Okay,
they go in the Muppet Theater and everything's dusty and all this kind of stuff, and then they start talking about the Muppets. The second one is the one where Amy Adams and company are kind of like, "We got to save the Muppets," and then
basically you talks more about the plot.
Yeah. It talks more about the plot, exactly. The first one's more of a teaser and intro. Mm. The second one is more plot. Right. So I thought it was worth putting both of them on here.
Oh, yeah, totally. The trailers have been brilliant. I love the trailers for this movie. They said awesome marketing. They've been marketing the hell out of this movie.
When they've got like 40 of them sitting in the car and they're all looking at each other like...
Yeah.
It's the car from the first movie.
Mm-hmm.
Like the big... Oh my God, I remember what they're called. The big station wagon. Studebaker? Yeah, the Studebaker. The big Studebaker.
Yeah, yeah. Yep.
Maybe. Okay. Yeah,
so that's the Muppets. So our excitement, mine is the Muppets!
Were you doing the Kermit arm wave there?
Yay! Yeah.
Sweet.
it does end in my...
Waka waka, like
a 5-year-old.
Yeah, I don't know if I wasn't committed to seeing movies that are on our list that I would be running out to the theater to see this. But it makes me extremely happy that the Muppets are you know still going. They're coming back, and I can only hope that the movie is successful. You know, because there, like I said, there's tons of kids that have never ever been really exposed to the Muppets, and I would love for them to be Muppet fans. So excitement, yes. Want to run to the theater to see it? Not exactly, but I will see it.
I'm kind of in that same vein. I'm glad they're coming back for sure. I've always loved the movies, but I can't say that I'd run out to the theater and see them because kind of the Muppets have always been kind of a fun at-home experience. It's a weird thing to say like that, but, you know, because watching the show with the family, we'd rent the movie and watch it as a family. It would come on a Sunday or a Saturday or a Sunday, and you'd watch it, you right. know, like that kind of thing. It wasn't a go-to-the-movies experience for me. At least for my family and my generation.
I think I saw the first two in the theater.
I can't remember for sure. We may have gone to see one of them in the theater, but I can remember more of renting them, and we just all sat around and watched it as a family.
Mm-hmm.
Do you know what I mean? At least the ones from the earlier ones.
Well, when the, you know, and I don't know how, you know, familiar Jeff is with the Muppets, but when the Muppets were, you know, when that first Muppet movie came out, I mean, the Muppets were huge. They were everywhere. They were a big deal. So
who doesn't remember the Rainbow Connection?
I had that album.
Rainbow Connection.
Yeah, exactly.
Lovers, the Dreamers, and me.
And Gonzo flying away with the balloons. Yeah. You know.
Oh yeah, yeah. I grew up with the Muppets, so not just Sesame Street, but the Muppets. Yeah. So.
Well, I'm definitely interested in seeing how they update them for today's audience too.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'm interested in seeing this whole Muppets thing and the whatever, and it's going to be funny, you know, and kind of like how they update the characters and make them more, you know, like you were talking about, like, I don't know any of what you were talking about before about, Miss Piggy being a supermodel and, you know, I haven't seen any of that. So that'll be funny to hear what they're doing today.
One more review that I read about this, it says, I wouldn't recommend this totally unfunny movie due to the lack of Sesame Street cameos. I mark this review as unhelpful.
Nice.
But that was a funny review on Netflix, I thought. It wasn't very helpful. Somebody else said, copy and pasted the phrase, I haven't seen it yet, but I know it's awesome, over and over and over and over and over again as a review.
Nice.
And gave it a 5-star review. And somebody else gave it a 4-star review saying, I want to see this movie really bad because I am a huge fan of Jim Henson, Muppets Go Muppets. Does he realize that Jim Henson is deceased?
I mean, I guess you could still be a fan of his.
Oh, true.
Except for the Dark Crystal.
But also there were some on there for 4- and 5-star reviews of people who saw advanced screenings. Mm-hmm. So... those were helpful. let me tell you, people, if you're going to put a review, make sure A, you've seen it, and B, you give reasons why you give the score it is. That's very something that makes sense, because I wouldn't recommend this unfunny movie due to a lack of Sesame Street cameos.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, some people don't want Sesame Street cameos. And if that's your only reason why you're calling it a 1-star, that's a lame excuse. So if you're going to review something...
You don't know the Muppets if that's all you're talking about is Sesame Street cameos.
Yeah.
I just want Bobo to be in it. If Bobo's in it, I'm happy.
Bobo the bear?
Mm-hmm.
Didn't you see him fencing?
Oh, was he in the trailer? Sweet.
Yeah. He was fencing.
Right.
So. The big old bear that...
Yeah.
Voice. Yes, used to be my user icon on LiveJournal.
Yes, that's definitely him.
Cute.
So he fences, apparently. We'll see.
So why weren't you Bobo Bear then?
Long story.
He's like long
story. No, we'll stick with Fuzz.
Exactly.
I'm good at that. Anyways, that's it. For the show, coming to attractions for next week, we're taking a look at A Single Man. In the present, we're going to take a look at The Lie. Ha! I'm lying. We're going to see The Immortals. Or Immortals. Not The Immortals. Immortals. In the future, The Darkest Hour. Please let us know what you think about any of these and any of our past movies. Going to COLmovies.com. Also, feel free, if you want to see any of the past movies, we also can access them through the movie store. Right at the top, it says... home, about, and then movie store. Click there and you can browse through all the movies that we've talked about in the past. You know, we really should go through what we've talked about in the present and see if we can add those on there too. But in any case, that would take a lot of work. You can also email us at colmovies@gmail.com. Leave a voicemail at 361-265-8255. That's 361-COL-TALK. Follow us on Twitter at twitter.com/COLmovies. Facebook, facebook.com/COLmovies. Also, please pop them to iTunes and leave us a review. We would very much appreciate it, especially if it was 5 stars. Okay, thanks. Final thoughts.
Happy Turkey Day.
Gobble, gobble, gobble.
Exactly.
By the way, speaking of which, anyways, that's after show. That reminds me, I've got a grasshopper pie that I need to eat.
Anyways.
Oh, gosh. Silly. Happy turkey.
Move it on. Mm-hmm.
With that for me, for Fuzz, for Steven. Take care, everyone.
Phenomena.
Hasta la vista, baby.
I wish I knew how to quit you.
That'll do, kid.
That's the worst goodbye I've ever heard. And you stole it from a movie.
He's looking at you, kid.
End of line.